This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is brought to you by Yo Radio, the first music and radio platform with stations curated and managed by artists and influencers from across the globe. From Drake Bell to Megadeth's David Ellefson to UFC star Uriah Hall, just to name a few. Welcome to Yo Radio. Yo Radio delivers the best listener experience and is completely free. From hip-hop to rock to blues to EDM, Yo Radio has the music you want at your fingertips. Download the app now in the App Store for Apple devices and in the Google Play Store for Android. Or just go to YoRadio.com. That's YoRadio.com.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Havana, Cuba. That is where Baseball Outside the Box is doing the show from. A beautiful site, the Nacional Hotel. It was a historical hotel looking over the water. You can almost see Miami from here. We are doing the show, and this is going to be a classic show, one of the best that we may have ever had so far. Remember, this is Pete Caliendo, your host of Baseball Outside the Box. I'm excited about today's show. I want to tell you about a very special person. We are here dealing in Cuba, working with coaches, working with players. This is our third time in Cuba, so this is three times that the show's been here. And I'm going to tell you about an outstanding manager, individual, and you are going to love his story. Why? Because there is no story in baseball like this anywhere in the world. How he came about being a manager, what he's accomplished is just incredible. And he will tell you many people can do this, and he's going to give you an idea why others can do what he has accomplished. First of all, I got to mention a very good friend of mine, Eddie Diaz. He is the Tampa Rays international scout, goes all over the place looking for players. He was a former minor league player with the New York Yankees, and he, interesting enough, this is a thing that really blows my mind out. I've studied managers all over the world, and I've never seen a manager who has won three consecutive championships in Mexico with Obregon, and during that same time, he won two Caribbean World Series. That, if you total that up, you just did the math, that is five championships in 3 years. Now, as we go along, you're going to hear some great things about managing, but first we're going to get into the story about how Eddie got started in the game. So first of all, we spent 4 days here, and I want to welcome my good friend, Eddie Diaz, Havana, Cuba. Eddie, how you doing, man?
I'm great. First of all, thank you so much. I was basically waiting for this day. I hear that you interviewed so many great names in the game of baseball, starting from Tony La Russa and so on. So it's a privilege for me to be in Out of the Box.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want coaches all over the world to hear this story because it's very unique. You don't hear these stories very often. So let's start off with, give us an idea. You know, I know you use a phrase a lot, you know, God delayed but doesn't deny. So let us know what that means and what it meant to you and how it accomplished what you've accomplished in the game, how it helped you do that.
Well, actually, it came with that phrase. I got released in 1985. And I went to the Dominican Republic right after spending the summer in New York playing softball. And I got married in 1985 in September. A woman that I'd been married for 32 years. I met in Waterloo, Iowa. I love my wife, Diane Diaz. She's been my rock. So we went to the Dominican. After the Dominican, I decided not to play the game any longer. 1987, played winter ball. And I went to New York to work like everybody else, and I spent 14 years away from baseball. The only thing I did in baseball was basically be an associate scout a couple of times. One of those was with Joe DeLuca in New York. But I was in real estate and selling insurance. But to be a little short and sweet, 1998, I went some money problems, but I met a good friend of mine. He's like my little brother, Chris Fanta. And his father and the mom, for some reason, they embraced me. And we decided to open a sport agency. And at that time, P, I don't have any money. I was flat broke. I was living in an apartment in Chicago, actually a studio. And my wife and my kids was in my parents' house, parents-in-law's house. And Chris Fanta's father approached me, asked me, I'm going to invest quite a bit of money. What can I trust on this? If you open an agency with my son, I said, my talent. So things went on, and I went to Mexico in 1999. And by an accident, I started managing. So many things happened from that time all the way to here. And it's really true. I mean, God might delay things for you, but he don't deny anything.
All right, now we got to cover it. You said all of a sudden it happened by accident. Well, we got to hear what the accident was, because this accident propelled to five major championships. We're talking about the Caribbean World Series with major players, big league players, some of the best countries in the world. So what was the accident?
Well, 1999, after I met the Mexicans' owners, there was one special man that will be in my heart. Nickname is Chara Mansour. He is the father, or was the father. He passed away. God have him in heaven. Roberto Mansour, who was the president and part owner for a long time with the Diablos, the best team in the summer in Mexico. And also Jose Antonio Mansour. So I went there to say goodbye because I was going back to the U.S. after my partner, Chris Fanta, and I bring some scout to watch the minor league players. So he says to me, what time do you leave in tomorrow? I say, 6 o'clock in the morning, because I got to go here from Cordova, Veracruz to Veracruz Airport and fly at 9 o'clock. Fly was to Houston, Chicago. So he says, I already got the manager to finish the season. I say, well, that's good. So you don't have to have so many headaches. With the Cafeteros, that's the name of the team, Cafeteros of Cordova. So, and I ask him, who's that guy? He says, you. I say, me? I never managed in my life, and I've been away from baseball for 14 years. I just got back as an agent. He says, I don't care. You remind me of Winston Llanos. Winston Llanos is a very successful president, part owner of the Águilas Cibaeñas in the Dominican Republic. So I always gamble in my life. And I said, all right, let's get it on. So I went to sit down with his son, Jose Antonio Mansour, and he started kind of telling me how much you're going to pay me. I said, look, I never managed in my life. My partner's leaving tomorrow. Give him $1,000. And what we're going to do, for a game that I win, you pay me $200. A game that I lose, don't pay me. So we ended 18 and 19. And the following year, they happy. They want to bring me back. So we settled for $3,000 a month. Still, I was on their pay. But I was a chance to recruit players. My partner deal with players in Korea, players in the state, and I was getting players in Mexico. And we did well. You know, 4 or 5 games on the 500 with a team with no chance. We fought all the way to the end to see if we made the playoff. Then I went in 2001 and managed Campeche. Then 2002, the Player Association said, hey, you're an agent. What are you doing? So 2004, managed Yucatan. But it came one time when I was managing, doing a favor to the owner, Jose Antonio Mansour. Rene Gallo, a longtime scout with Cleveland and Pittsburgh, approached me and says, you know what? Why you don't sell some of your businesses that you do and become a manager full-time? Because you handle the bullpen well and you get players to play. And I said, wow. You know? And then it came all the way back in 2000 when I had the chance to meet Tony La Russa for only 2 minutes. Mike Isler, I was his agent. He asked me to give him a ride, so I went to the locker room. And Tony was there like 6:15 in the morning with a coffee in his hands. I never forget that. And I asked him, can I ask you a question, Mr. La Russa? He said, sure. What a good manager needs to be a winner? He says, good players. I never forget that stuff. But anyway, going back to 2007, I decided to sell all the boxes that I have at one time. I saw my partner as an agent. And I saw a little basketball team that I have from the IBL, minor league. And I started managing full time. And all the success started coming since 2007.
Now, most people listening to the show are going to say, man, this guy's crazy. You didn't know anything about coaching, managing, nothing. What made you think that you could have been the manager you are today. What are the qualities? You had to say to yourself, how can I do this?
That was three things. First of all, the faith and love that I have for Jesus Christ. And that's when I say, hey, God delayed so many things for me, but he's not going to deny. I got my rock, which is my wife, Deanne. Deanne has been everything. She is the one who raised my kids. So I have both of them side to side. So I decide to myself, if I apply all my adventures and I apply all my knowledge that I use in sales and managing so many salespeople, I can manage baseball players. So I say, I'm going to do this full time because they already tell me I'm good to get the pitcher out of the mound before he get the hit, yeah, and also make players a play. So that was in 2007 when I took a job in Dominican Republic by Winston Llanas, Felix Fermin, and actually Kevin Flete, which is Dominican. He's been a GM in Mexico. He was the one who told Felix, hey, take him to the Dominican to be your bench coach. So Winston was very happy because he knows me for a long time. So I went there as a bench coach, and I got a phone call from Rene Gallo. He says, hey, Mazatlan wants you to go manage. So Winston say, hey, go ahead. That would be the best experience you will have. So I went to manage Mazatlan and win a ball. They was in seventh place with no chance, and we went to the finals that year.
Wow. And you mentioned, I know you mentioned, Wiz, as we're traveling here in Havana, it's been a great pleasure because I've learned so much from you. Just watching you interact with players and coaches and talk about things. When you've had 9 years, I believe, in Mexico, consecutive years that you manage in Mexico, and all the championships. Now that you've done all that, what's your advice to coaches or managers out there? What are some of the best qualities a manager needs to have to be a championship manager? And you've also studied some managers at the same time.
Yes, I always liked Tony La Russa. I always liked Sparky Anderson. And I try to do a good blend out of it with Joe Torre as well. So I think communication is the key. Understand the nature of each player. But the main thing that really gave me success was patience. Patience is the magic of success. If you have patience and understand and allow the player to be who they want to be and don't cut any energy for the player, thing becomes easier. And that year when we went to the final, the following year, for some reason, we don't agree, they don't sign me back. I went back again to the Dominican as a bench coach. So the team that beat us in the final now is in last place. And guess what? That team was looking for me. So I asked Winston Llanas, he says, you got to go. You're born to be a manager. So I went to the team that was in last place, and we made the playoff the last day. It was unbelievable. We made the playoff the last day. People was happy in Obregón. And it was so grateful on my part that I was released by Mazatlan, because if I would have not been released in the end of the season, I would have not accomplished what I accomplished in Obregón. I'm the only manager in the history of Mexico, and not being Mexican, which I love Mexico a lot, that spent 9 seasons in one team. Yeah, the other record was Paquin Estrada, which I have a lot of respect. The other one, Cananea Reyes, where I never have a chance to meet, supposedly the best manager ever in Mexico, and Aurelio Rodriguez, rest in peace as well. They all spent 7 seasons with their organization. I last 9 with Yankees of Obregón.
So some of the things that, as you managed, some of the things that, you know, maybe you learned that you didn't know, but you learned as you went along managing. What, you know, some of the advice you can give our coaches and managers out there?
Well, once again, patient and be organized. One of the things that a lot of coaches do is, you know, when they finish the game, they want to probably be in the stadium 1 hour before practice. You got to take the job as your doctor's office. Like if you're a doctor, no matter how late I finish the game and have a few drinks with my coaches, if I go to bed at 4 or 5 in the morning, I was in the stadium at 10 o'clock in the morning. Go walk a few steps, go to the office, talk to the owner for an hour and a half, let him know what I'm planning to do, and go back to the locker room, watch my locker room to see everything was in place so players be happy. I put my socks, my pants, and a t-shirt and watch the game the day before. And at the same time, I want to see the face of every player when they come in so I can deal with it on a daily basis, because every player is different. So I want to know if the player that don't smile, smile. I want to know what the heck is going on. Why he's smiling that day? I want to know the player that never smile, that day still like that. So I want to see their faces before we go to the practice and have patience with them. You know, that's the thing. And never cut the aggressiveness. When you got a guy who's aggressive and he throw out at third base, I don't believe in the rule that the third out should not be in third base. That's me. I got people running a second base with direct signs. I only have one sign through the third base coach. That was a hit run. All my signs was through first base coach or directly to the player when he was in second base. You play the old-fashioned thing, there's two outs, and put me the shortstop on the hole, and you put me the second baseman toward first base, you're dead. I'm running.
Folks, you're listening to Eddie Diaz, Pete Caliendo, your host with Baseball Outside the Box. Eddie Diaz, 5 championships in 3 years, 2 Caribbean World Series championships, and lots of major leaguers on these clubs. You're listening to how he deals with players, and these are some really, really great advice. And Eddie, you know, you mentioned rules because I heard you talk to some of the coaches here. You didn't have many rules. You had a few rules for the team. I want you to explain the rules you had and why you had those rules.
Well, to be successful, you need to understand the play, like I mentioned so many times. And in my first meeting, I told him, I said, look, I'm a man with not a lot of rules, okay? Be on time, play hard, and if you ever have any problem, don't talk in the corners. Come to me and we take care of her. Don't show me off. I would never do that. That's why they nicknamed me the commander. Because no matter what happened, I stay calm. But I told them, if you show me up in the mound, then we're going to have a problem in the dugout. But I never have any big issue with any player that went out of control. You know, we always have a chance to talk. I believe in communication. And I'm going to tell you this. After we win the first championship, we went to Puerto Rico and win the Caribbean Series. First foreigner in Mexico to win the Caribbean Series. Came back the second year. We win again. We lost the Caribbean Series in Dominican. I got an offer to manage in the Dominican Republic. So the team in Mexico understand. I said, I want to be near to my brother. He was pretty ill by that time. I already lost my mom and my dad. And I was managing a team called Toros. So the Toros, for some reason, ownership and myself were not clicking, and I was let go in December. So I decided to expand the next Christmas in Dominican with my kids, my wife, that they never get, you know, they never been in Dominican before. They've been in Mexico, but never in Dominican. It's funny because I'm Dominican. So I started getting phone calls. Couple of teams in Dominican, but I told them, no, I don't want to keep managing. But I got a phone call from the team that I went to championship back-to-back. So I say, no, I don't think it's fair because you already got a manager. He says, well, but the whole city is putting big signs that they want you back. So it wasn't until December 29, which my daughter's birthday, and she said, Dad, why you don't go? No team in Mexico and Winter Boy ever win 3 times. And those guys will win if you go there. So I made a couple of phone calls to Luis Mendoza. And he says, you should come back. With you here, we're going to get a lot of energy. So I told him, I talked to the GM. I said, okay, I'm going back. But I'm going to go back directly to the playoff. Would you agree? Because I'm not going to leave my family alone. He says, okay. So the owner, Rene Arturo Rodriguez, was very instrumental and happy I was going back. Francisco Mijares, the general manager. Another GM, which was my bench coach the year before. Everybody was happy I went back. And guess what? We win. And we beat the team that we need to be, which was Culiacan. I got together with my guys, and I told them, I said, look, we're going to go play up there. You never underestimate the heart of a champion, and we are the champion. But we're going to go and fight with your feet on the ground and eyes to the sky. And we're going to do this. So we went up there. We beat him in 5 games. And the next team we played, Mexicali, we beat him in 4. We win that. Then we went to Hermosillo and win the Caribbean Series. Matter of fact, there was 18 innings. We beat the Dominicans. And that house of the whole story take place in Obregón.
You know, it's amazing. You know, now times are changing a little bit. You got a lot of technology. You got a lot of players have private coaches, private hitting coaches, you know, private pitching coaches. You had a question. I think a lot of coaches would really love to hear this, an answer of, they run into, managers sometimes run into difficult players. you know, and how do you deal with that? Because, you know, you're dealing with major league players, minor league players coming from all different countries, you know, sometimes, you know, how do you deal with a guy that's a little bit more difficult?
Well, I got a chance with one of the big league players, which I like to reserve the name, but I sit down with him and I said, look, you probably don't like me. I don't know why, you know, and probably don't like what you do. But at 7 o'clock, you're my best friend. So he smiled. And I said, look, all you need here is you're going to do things that you do for your family. I understand your situation. You have to understand mine. And you're going to tell me how do you feel doing things that I want you to do. And we probably don't go all the way to D. Maybe we'll B and C. So that guy from that day was actually, and he become one of my best friends today and become my coach. I got another player who was very difficult guy as a player, but we become so close. Daryl Brinkley, one of the best hitter in winter ball, but one of the best hitter in the minor league. And he says to me one day, you know what? It's so great that you talked to me that day because you changed a lot on me. Mm. And one day I give him a phone call. I say, hey, Daryl, this is Eddie. Hey, how's it going, Eddie? I got a job for you as a hitting coach. Really? I said, yeah, you're going to be my hitting coach. Be ready. You're flying in a couple of days. I'll meet you in Hermosillo. And right now he's working with the Cincinnati Reds. So I like when I get players that become difficult in their playing time and I have a little chance to talk to them and things change.
Well, it sounds like you've helped some players along the way. Now, it's a long season. You know, these baseball seasons are long. There's ups and downs. As a manager, how many team meetings did you have? How did you pick times that you had to meet with the team, you know, because of maybe something that happened? How did you decide any of that?
What I did at the beginning, I said, look, we have a meeting today before the season. We do rah, rah, rah. We all jumping down and let's go. And I might do one meeting if things get out of control. But I was not a guy that had a lot of meetings. I like to talk to players and motivate them on the ear. So to me, that works. 2012, I got the offer to manage the Diablos in the summer. And I know that team is going to have a lot of problems because they cut a lot of salaries. And if you want to see a player, especially overseas, pissed off, cut their salary. So I know that I was dealing with a big, big problem. And we have a lot of people hurt. And a lot of people ask me, why do you want that problem? I say, well, because this is the Diablos. And this is the best team ever in Mexico. 16 championships. But that's you gambling. I say, I don't care. I gamble all my life. And I'm in the name, you know, I'm in the hands of the Lord. To cut the story short, all those problems came to one problem. And that problem become resolved. And we win 61 game. And we went to the playoff. So to me, what you have to understand, you have a job that you have to take care of every day. And you got players that they need you. Some players, they don't understand their problems. And you have to be the one who sit down with them and you have patience. If you don't have a patience and you're not willing to invest $300-$400 in a nice dinner to talk to your players, you don't want to win a championship.
I'll tell you what, like I said, you know, I was telling the audience, I've spent 4 days here with you, and I watch you interact with coaches and players, and you can hear a pin drop when you're talking because, you know, you've got their attention right away. Now, how was your communication with your coaches? What the responsibilities, what did you expect from some of your coaches? You know, how far did you let them go? You know, some of the important things that dealing with coaches as a manager.
Well, to me, the most important coach that I need to have side to side is my pitching coach, okay? My pitching coach is basically my assistant. And everybody else have to be a coach doing their job, and I respect that. But I don't get involved with their stuff, but I demand work. And winter ball especially, I ask all my coaches to be in the stadium three or 2 hours before the practice. You always have to do something extra. I'm not a candidate of see coaches coming to the locker room 30 minutes before. With me, I told them in the beginning, I say, if you're here late, you get strike one. But it's not strike three with me. You'll be out. I take this very seriously. You become a coach of a great organization, but you got to put things in place. And I never forget our conversation that I had with John McLaren, which he was very responsible for my job with the Tampa Bay Rays scout. And he says to me, Eddie, one thing I learned all these years is get things done and get it at the right time. So to me, that's important. If a coach doesn't do the job or doesn't work, he got to get another job. And my coaches last with me a long time, all the coaches.
Yeah, again, you can just see it. You can hear it. You know, I can see the coaches, the respect that you get from the coaches, you know, just the way you talk and the way you present yourself. Very organized, very detailed oriented. Now, how about ball games? This will be interesting. Prior to a series, you know, that you play, what were some of the preparations you did, you know, with your team as far as the other, you know, knowing the opposing pitcher or opposing hitters? What did you do to prepare the team for each series?
I'm a very detailed. I like to watch in Mexico, in winter ball, when the night was over, I never watched my own game. I always watched the repeat from the other game, which is the team that I was facing the next day. So that's the team I watch. So my coaches, they have in the first game of each series, they have to meet with their players, if it's a hitting coach or the pitching coach with the pitchers. I demand a lot. And I do my own statistics. I did my own research. I was on top of everything. I want to know who was hurt. One day, I'm in the batting cage, and I told one of my players, hey, you in the lineup today. He said, oh, thank you. He's excited. I mean, he's one of those guys that play once in a while. And I asked him if you know who's pitching tonight. And he says to me, no, I don't. So I say, well, you know what? You go back to the bench. You're not going to play tonight. And I force my players and I force my coaches to be prepared way ahead of time. And that helped me a lot through my career.
You know, something I also noticed about you as we're going through around Havana and talking to coaches, baseball is a very traditional game, right? We, you know, many coaches, unfortunately, including myself, fall under sometimes, you know, the way we did it in the past. We're going to do it again the same way. You're not a traditional manager, and that's what I love about you, because when I hear things, I'm hearing things that you believe in, but not necessarily that the game believes in. So how you manage certain situations sometimes is completely different. You mentioned one of them, being aggressive, not worrying about making the third out at third base. What are some other areas that you were traditionally different possibly than some other managers?
Well, you know, like you said, you know, probably the people thinking, hey, you know what? What he's talking about? Men in second base with two. Well, if the guy doing 5-6, you know, 1-5, 1-6, and he's comfortable in the mound, I'm running. You know, you're not gonna get me. But like my sign through first base. When I went to steal, I got a special sign with my first base coach, and he transmit that to my runner. So it's an order run, because I know this guy's slow, and I know when he's slow, and I always was actually watching the catcher based on the way he positioned behind the play, where he's put the hand on the glove. So I kind of pick what kind of sign that he using at that moment. So first base coach and my team was a tough job. Also, when men are second base, if, you know, the first three innings, you guys not going to look at me. I need you to look at the trainer. He's going to be in the end of the dugout. If he has a towel in the right shoulder, you're running. So he already have a sign with me in the corner when I want them to run. Like if I know in that time he's going to run, I look at him, he put a towel, they look at the towel, and they were running. So it was a lot of stuff that I was doing out of the game that today some managers find out later, and they apply those things in winter ball.
You know, one of the toughest things, at least I believe one of the hardest things sometimes during a game, is determining when you're going to take the pitcher out. Maybe you can give some advice to some of our managers out there, because it's not an easy thing to do. Obviously, you have a lot of resources, a lot of information, but, you know, is there a gut feeling sometimes to take them out? How did you deal with that? Because you're dealing with, you know, at the high level.
If I think, if anybody tell you, like, well, it's because the last pitch was high in the zone. The catcher tell you, honestly, it's in your stomach. It was something that, to me, I was lucky. I'm going to give you an indication. We played 18 innings against the Dominican in the Caribbean Series. And I brought some pitchers. And people say, why he's bringing that guy right now? Well, you know what? He got the right slider for this hitter. And the other guy, for some reason, I'm not going to leave him there. And it happened to me in the past because I used to look at the coach and say, what do you think? He goes, just give him another pitch. And you know what? I don't even turn my face, and the home run was all over the left center. So it's right in your stomach. You have to feel it. I'm going to tell you what I did once. I brought in Daniel Baca, a relief pitcher. And I got in the bullpen, Hugo Castellano, one of the right-handed pitchers, sidearm. Matter of fact, he pitched in big league camp for Tony La Russa. And Baca, first pitch, ball one, ball two. And I say, you know what? He's not going to hurt me. I took him out.
Right away.
And I broke Castellano. A lot of people ask me, well, you already got two balls. I said, I don't care. I just don't want to run. So it's in your stomach.
So, you didn't have a good feeling there. Obviously, you've got a lot of experience, and you're also fearless. You're not afraid to make that decision, you know, because you believe in yourself, obviously.
How can I be afraid when I was away for 14 years selling real estate, selling insurance, flat broke in the end, and all I had was the love of the Lord, my wife, which is everything to me, my kids, and what did I need to do? Everything I do in my life is a gamble. You know, I'm a Dominican who signed at the age of 17, got released by the Yankees, went to the Atlanta Braves, got released by the Braves, went to Cleveland Indians, and it's been my life. So God delayed so many things for me, but he never denied it in the end. And I'm here with you in Cuba.
Folks, and I'm thrilled that you're here in Cuba with me because I've learned so much, and I think we've had a great time together. You know, we told you this was going to be an unbelievable story. You're hearing a story from Eddie Diaz. Eddie, managing in practice, when you're running practices, how involved were you in teaching? In teaching, you know, whether it be hitting or pitching or helping players, how much of that did you do with the players personally?
Well, when you deal with players in winter ball more than the summer in Mexico, you deal with adults, guys that are playing AAA in the big league. But I tell you what, I told my pitching coach, look, I don't want just a regular BP. I want game situation. Let him free the first round, no problem. And if you tell them two bunts, they're not going to do it the right way. So the way we're going to do it is like this. Let him be free the first round. Second round, we have men on second base. Don't move him over. I want you to bring him in. Hit bullets. That's what you want. You want to hit, but hit bullets. I don't want my coaches to get upset if he doesn't swing a bad pitch. So if he don't think that pitch was a good pitch, let him go. So the third round, I want running first and third. I don't want ground ball over play. I want to the gap. Here, have fun. Hit it hard. And the last two rounds, enjoy it. But the second group is already bunting. A coach have to be there throwing to those guys, doing good bunts. And when they finish the round, then they go and hit. So they don't have to bunt before they hit their BP. So, and I'm on top of that. I'm a very picky with pitchers. Like I told my pitching coach, I don't want to see anybody walking if we get in trouble. The first two guys that we have up got to be there before the game start. So if you look at a lot of games in the summer and winter ball, pitchers start walking in the third inning. And sometime when the starter get in trouble, they run into the bullpen. No, not with me. I'm very demanding with that.
Now, when you're running practice, let's say you see a player who just isn't giving it that effort. You know, you're doing a bunting, and he just isn't really into it or trying that hard. How do you deal with that situation at that level?
Well, I got to find out first what's going on with him. Yeah. You know, and I'm going to say, hey, well, you're doing this, you're doing that. Bad boys knows everything. Chloe people knows what's going on. And it happened with one player, which he was actually not having a good BP. He looks moody. And that player is one of my best players. So what I did, he comes out, he bite me. And in the third round, he comes. Before he hit the fourth round, I got my arm around him. And I say, I just want to let you know that I love you. Anything you need from me, I'm over there. So he looks at me. He don't say anything. I went back to my locker room, and I know he loved Diet Coke. And in my freezer, I sent him 4 Diet Coke and a little note. So he came by, he says, thank you so much. And that was one of the greatest nights he had. He's for a cycle. I got a player, which is my catcher, Iker Franco. The night before, we have a little party because it was Christmas. And I got together with a player before we go and stretch. And I said, where's Iker? And I said, well, he doesn't feel good. And I know the trainer was protecting him. So I said, all right, let's stretch. I went inside, and he is in the training room, sleeping. But that game for me was very important as well for everybody. So I went and I say, hey, my nickname with him is Gordo. Gordo, how you doing? I'm fine. I just got a headache. I said, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. So I told the trainer, I said, let the light be off. Let him rest and get him ready for the game. He got 2 home runs and 6 RBIs.
Wow.
So the next day he says, what can I do? So what I did not being in the stretch is a bad example. I said, very easy. Go apologize and you pay the pizza after the stretch. He went, he said, hey guys, apologize. And everybody got together, happy. And he ordered some pizza. And the guys, if you build chemistry amongst your players, and it's a trust, and they look at their eyes and say, hey, you know, we all together. I had a great group of people every time I managed.
You know, you're hearing, these are a lot of big league players, a lot of professionals, and you're hearing how to manage people, how to, you know, believe in people, make them believe in themselves. This is outstanding stuff. I love that you talked about the game situations. I'm talking about big league players, and you want game situations. You want real things happening in practice. So you're just not wasting time going through the situations. I heard you talk about, there was a coach here that asked you today, and being Spanish, I didn't understand at all. And he asked you about the batting order. How did you decide on the batting order? Who did you have in the lineup? Did you make changes? How did you deal with the batting order on a daily basis?
Well, pretty easy. I mean, you need people on base before you score. And Barbaro Canizares from Cuba, good hitter, good roll power, played, I believe, like a month in the big league with the Braves. He was my 4 hitter all year. But he struggled. So I sit down with him. I said, look, I'm going to make sure you hit 8. And I'm going to put somebody behind you who has been pretty hot, which is Sergio Contreras, a Mexican player. He says, Skip, whatever you decide, that's what I would do. So Victor Diaz, another swing and miss guy with a lot of power. I hit him in front of him. Douglas Clark, pretty good Mexican approach. He's American. Hit him 5th. And I got Iker Franco in 4. So all those guys was getting in base, and they got a pitch to him. And he says, you know what? Thank you so much for being the MVP. I said, well, you deserve it because you understand our situation. So a lot of the big league managers in this era do different things. You have to respect all those moves because they know something probably that we don't know. You know, every time I manage against any manager, and I'm not going to bring any name, I manage with against guy that today is our third base coach in the big league, guys that manage in the big league. I never manage against players. I manage against managers. I want to know if they get scared, nervous, if they go to the bullpen right away. I'm going to tell you this, true story. This a player that comes in, we win him by 1 run. Base hit, left field. The second hitter in 8 inning, not bunting. Base hit, left field. And it comes a Mexican right behind those 2 foreigners. Check this out. So my infield coordinator asked me, what bunt situation you want me to put on? I said, hold on, let me see what's going on. He sent a runner to first base. And this is a guy who is in the big league today, the manager. And I said, you know what? He wants to beat me before he tie. So I went personally to the mound. I said, look, you're going to throw a fastball right in the middle. We have the wheel plate right here. And the pitcher is Mario Mendoza. He says, but Eddie, I said, listen to me. He doesn't want to bunt. He's pissed off because he don't bunt the next hitter, and he's upset that he's the one bunting. So he threw a fastball right in the middle. The bunt was like a ground ball to third base. Assist a third, double play, we out of the inning. So you got to manage against a manager. You got to know the where, what spot they have that you can say, I got them. So, and that gave me success.
Awesome, man. The great stuff. Now, one of the hardest things to do, you got a big roster. You know, there's a lot of players, obviously. You know, how do you keep them happy? I mean, now, you know, the old days, so many players played, and then when your turn came up, you played. Things are kind of changing a little bit, and I heard you talk about this. So how'd you keep your players fresh? How'd you make those decisions?
Well, you got to understand the nature of each one, like I mentioned before. But at the same time, if you got 24 guys happy, you're fine. You only have another two or three unhappy. So you need to have percentage of people happy. Because if you have the biggest percentage, then it's fine. You got to keep your level of energy. If a guy hit a home run with bases loaded, give him a hug. Why not give him a hug? Why not celebrate with a guy? I don't believe in showing people off. If the guy strike out and he passed by you, you know, and you look at the other side. No, look at the guy and say, hey, you get it next time. And if you strike out a second time, hey, you get it next time. I'm going to tell you, when I was hired by Obregon, they in last place after they win the championship, my first game that I managed with Obregon, we lost against Culiacan. We lost 9-2. We went back home in Obregon, and the first game that we play in Obregon, being a manager of Obregon, we lost 5-3. So the following day, at the stretch, I say, hey, guys, the first game that I managed with you guys, we lost 9-2. Now we 5-3, so we're getting closer now. And we win back-to-back. So little things here, little thing there. If you do the right way and you motivate them, you get things done.
Now, you told me something I thought was very important, how you broke down the at-bats also, you know, every player. And you broke it down in an interesting way, so that way every player had so many at-bats throughout the year.
Yeah, there was a player that he wait for me, first day of training camp. He says, look, I hear so many great things about you, how you deal with players, but I know I'm not going to play because you got Alfredo Mesa got short, you got your second baseman, Valencia, and you got Murillo at third base. So I'm not going to have any chance. I said, look, a normal, regular, everyday player to get about 200 bats or 175 bats in winter. Yes. I say, okay, would you be happy if I gave you 100 at-bats for the season? He says, I will be very happy. I say, no problem. I'm going to give you enough at-bats a week that you get those at-bats. So it's my duty to get you 15 at-bats per week to 20. You might play one game, but you might come out of the bench. How's that? He says, we got a deal. He only got 72, but he was very happy.
See, that's the great stuff I love to hear. That's you're dealing with individuals, and I love the way you did that. We're going to try to finish this show with a few more questions. But I want to get into now, because, again, I spent 4 days with Eddie listening, and I want to get into the fundamentals of the game a little bit when it comes to the pitching, the hitting. You know, you believe in certain fundamentals that need to be taught that a lot of players are not doing. Let's start with the pitching. A few things that you believe pitchers need to do that they're sometimes you see as you travel as a scout or as a manager that they're not doing well enough.
I work for a great organization, which is the Tampa Bay Rays, and I'm a very happy individual. I got an opportunity to, probably was my only opportunity to manage in the minor league. And when I got a phone call that they asked for permission, I told the Rays, I'm ready to give you my word, I stay. So I'm very thankful that I work for such a good organization, and they teach you a lot. You need to learn how to break down mechanics. I believe the young kids need to learn how to have better strike. They need to learn how to use their hips. They need to learn how to use their shoulder. They need to learn how to get arms in proper position. I'm not an expert, but when you learn yourself as a scout to describe the mechanic of a pitcher and have the confidence that you can sit down with a pitching coach or somebody who's an expert in the area and teach you how he's going to change this kid, their mechanic, for a better, that's when you say, you know what, I appreciate what I do. It's like hitters. It's very hard to evaluate a hitter.
Hitters, yes.
It's very tough.
That's right.
So one of the best hitting coaches for me, Mike Easler. I remember when he used to bring the little, say, the happy zone. And I say, wow, what do you mean by the happy zone? And he says, Eddie, the happy zone, you got to create a spot that you hit the ball and not only simple, but in every approach that you get out of the plate. So being a scout, it shows me the other side of the game, how to understand players better when they're young. Because when you manage, you want to win today and win tomorrow. And like I mentioned, I work for a great organization. I got great people above me, like Patrick Walters, Carlos Rodriguez, Chaim Bloom, you know, Steve Miller, and on and on and on and on. And I tell you, you know, Mitch Lukovich and the player development, Bill Evers, I learned so much from those guys, as well from other interviewers that you have, like Tony La Russa.
Yeah.
He's been one of my favorite managers all time.
And it sounds like you're a constant learner. I mean, you're open-minded. You recommend the coaches. I mean, be open-minded. You know, learn. Even though you've won 4 to 5 championships, you continue to learn.
Of course, because what happened to me was an accident, you know, thanks to the Lord. And I have such a great wife that just stood with me in my crazy dreams. She told me last year, she says, you know what? She gave me a hug and a kiss, and she say, now I understand what you say. Everything I do is for you guys. And that brought tears in my eyes because my family is everything. But going back to managerials, strategies, every time I saw La Russa so calm in so many ways, Tom Lasorda so happy and excited for things that happen, Sparky Anderson, the way he's communicating, Paquin Estrada in Mexico, they kind of say that he was lucky. I say, no, but, you know, you don't get somebody 12 championships because you're lucky.
Yeah.
You have to be doing something right.
Yep.
So I respect managers, and I learn from managers. But I, you know, I got managers that one day I would love to sit down, shake their hands, and talk, like La Russa, Joe Torre, Tony Lasorda. When I watch those guys, I just love. I never watched the game. When Tony was managing, I watch him and I want to see what was the next move. What he's doing now? You know, sometimes it goes 6-7 innings. I don't even know the score. My wife asks me, "Who's winning?" I say, "I don't know." "What do you mean you don't know?" I say, "No, I just managing with the manager." So you need to learn. You have to respect the game. And anybody that you think that knows less than you, you're wrong. He always knows something that you need to become more successful tomorrow.
You're listening to Eddie Diaz. Again, 3 Mexican championships in a row. And the same 3 years, 2 Caribbean World Series championships. Unbelievable accomplishment. Very humble, very smart. Learning from other people. Eddie, we're coming to the end now. Here's something that we normally do at the end of the show a lot, you know, because there's so much to cover. We can't cover everything. But when it comes to managing, I want you to give some advice to coaches out there that want to be a manager. One, you know, some really good advice on how to get there. But two, and we've heard a lot of it, but maybe last-minute things we didn't cover. Two, once they get there, how to be successful.
Well, first of all, you have to understand players. You're not the show. The players are the show. If you understand your players, and once again, the nature of each player, one general manager from one of the teams in the WBC says to me, "I care for my players. I don't love them." I say, "You're wrong. I love my players because they give me famous." So if you understand the nature, write things day in and day out. Have a little book. I asked one manager once, "Hey, you have goals in life?" I was in a seminar. He says, "Yes, I do." I said, "You put them in writing." He says, "No." I said, "So there's no goals." I mean, you got to write down goals, you know, how hard it will be and how you're going to get there. So if you understand the nature of the players and you're willing to take notes day in and day out, and you give freedom to your coaches to work and make the decisions, we're not showing anybody off, and don't hesitate to do it, you'll be fine.
Fantastic. What a great way to end a show. Eddie, this has been a great show, but it's been a great 4 days being with you. You know, we've known each other for a long time, but this, you know, spending 4 days with you, we have not done that in, you know, in a long time. And I've learned so much. So, and thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it and look forward to hopefully, you know, not only doing another show, but doing a lot of things together.
Once again, God delay, but don't deny. I got an interview in your program. It's another plus. I don't know what's going to happen with my career. I hope that my last goal, that I want to spend at least one day in the big league on uniform.
Yeah.
That's my main goal. So thank you so much. And I have no words to say thank you many times. And thank you again.
Well, folks, you know Eddie Diaz is going to spend at least one day in the big leagues in a uniform, because he told you he has goals. He writes the goals down. He's accomplished something that I believe no manager in the game of baseball has accomplished with his background, where he came from, how he did it. You know, obviously he's had some mentors along the way. This has been a great show. Folks, we are in Havana, Cuba. What a great country, great people. We're at the Nacional Hotel, the National Hotel. We've been here coaching with the International Sports Group. We've been coaching coaches and players. We've met with the Federation. We're trying to help build, you know, younger coaches that are working with kids. As you know on the show, you all know we believe in that the foundation of this sport anywhere in the world is our coaches at the younger levels. Eddie's a big believer in that. He stressed it to the Cuban Baseball Federation. We want to thank the Cuban Federation for allowing us to be here in Havana with them, because without their invitation, we would not be here. So thanks to the Cuban Baseball Federation. Thank you, Freddy Diaz, for being on the show. And don't forget to join us on the next show. This is Baseball Outside the Box. We want to wish you a great coaching day. And I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. God bless you. See you in the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.